Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on a sunny Friday afternoon in downtown Chicago. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. A lot going on today. A lot of it in Austin, Texas. In fact, we're going to start there. We'll talk a little bit later with Scott Kleinberg, who writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune, some pretty cool things happening there. And Lucy Amundson, who's the co-proprietor of Locally Laid Eggs. They raise their chickens actually outside on a pasture, and it's an egg farm. It's a startup. It's a non-tech startup, but a startup nonetheless from 4 years ago. So we'll check in with her. But let's head south. Amina Alahi, writes for Blue Sky Innovation, and she is in Austin for the South by Southwest Conference. Not only is she there, she's standing in line or outside in preparation of going in to see President Obama speak today, the first sitting president, to address that conference. Amina, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, thank you.
All right, so you're down there. Everyone's waiting to hear from President Obama. What are your expectations from the president?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of excitement down here. The theater that we're going to be seated in holds about 2,400 people, and the line wraps all the way around the building. So people that I spoke to so far seem excited to hear what the president has to say about civic engagement and the possibilities for technology to allow ordinary citizens to help the government and also to hear kind of the challenge that he's going to issue. But others said, you know, this may be the last time that we get to see him speak live as president. So I think people are seeing it as that kind of opportunity as well.
I saw someone build it as his speech sort of being as code for your country. He's going to talk about this tech hire initiative and all of that. I mean, that has been a focus of this president, and he's made a couple of announcements this week leading up to this speech.
Certainly he has. He is, of course, known as being one of the most tech-savvy presidents we've ever had, particularly for his use of social media. But one of the initiatives launched this week is a partnership between a diaper brand and Jet.com, which sells goods online to offer low-income families access to more affordable diapers, which can be a really costly expense. So he's thinking of different ways to use technology to help Americans.
What do we expect from Chicago? I mean, I know the city is down there with the presence trying to bring some of these tech companies back north with them.
That's right. There's a big push from Chicago Made, which is run by World Business Chicago, Mayor Emanuel's sort of pro-Chicago tech coalition. And what they're doing down here is a series of events. One is more focused on tech people. It'll be networking and panels and that sort of thing. And then later on next week, they'll be having a music event. But the idea is really to sell Chicago as a place that has culture, that has a tech scene, and is a good place to start a business.
How about that? Does it work? I mean, has it worked for the city to go down there with the presence? I know Jimmy Chamberlain, right, is going to be one of the people down there, one of those ambassadors. But will they be able to bring people back north?
He is, and that's the big question. This year, they're taking a sort of different approach than they have in the past. They used to do sort of a booth in the big exhibition hall, which certainly gets a lot of foot traffic, but then you're competing with all the other thousands of booths that are set up in the same room. So I think the idea with doing this full-day lounge is that it would let people see a little more Chicago culture, meet different entrepreneurs. Jimmy Chamberlain certainly is one. John Silva is another. And, you know, kind of experience what Chicago has to offer in terms of culture by doing giveaways. I think they're going to have some Chicago beer on site. So I think it remains to be seen how successful it will be, but the idea is definitely to sell the city.
Amina Alahi is on the telephone. She writes for Blue Sky Innovation for the Chicago Tribune, and she's at South by Southwest, which is just getting started. So obviously she writes about technology and innovation, so she's interested in that. But I want to know, Amina, what are you individually sort of geeked out about being down there? What are you looking forward to the most?
Well, I would say tacos, but don't tell my editor that.
Right.
But really one of the things that I'm really interested in is seeing this conversation about online harassment. There's going to be a big summit on it tomorrow, following some drama last fall when some panels over the subject were canceled and subsequently reinstated because attendees felt like it's a really important topic to cover. And I think there's going to be a lot of debate and discussion, and it should be interesting to see how people who are embedded in the technology world are thinking about how to address that very important topic.
And just to review on that a little bit, there were a couple of conferences set up about abusive behavior in the gaming industry, I think it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then South
yes.
by Southwest canceled that. That created a huge stir and prompted the organizers then to sort of reconnoiter, and now they're going to look at it. And so that's one of the things that you'll have your eyes on this week.
That's the plan.
Mina Alahi, thank you very much for joining us. I hope you enjoy and get a great story out of the president. And then I hope you're able to find some really nice tacos in Austin, Texas. It's 12:22. You're listening to The Business Lunch. It's a Friday afternoon here on 720 WGN. Adam Oxtein is in the studio, the founder and CEO of Stratex. He's been on the program before. Adam, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
And so, you know, we were talking, of course, during the break about college basketball.
Yes, we were.
Bring that mic a little closer to you.
Sure.
You can move it, too. So, and, you know, we were almost preempted. That's kind of what we were joking about, because you were on pins and needles wondering whether Northwestern was going to be playing today. I find out you're a Maryland guy.
I am.
And my first question is, I didn't have to ask the question. I just said, well, and you said no. Right,
Maryland. We're an ACC team. We're not a Big Ten team.
Maryland in the Big Ten. I don't ever get used to that.
Nor will I.
I'm not used to Penn State in the Big Ten yet, or
Rutgers,
or
Nebraska.
It just doesn't seem right. All right, yeah. So that's not why we're here. Tell me first about Stratex. What is that company?
Stratex, we're an HR provider of software and services for small to mid-sized businesses. We provide software to help automate paper stuff and wrap around high-touch HR services for companies that need the HR.
So it sounds like you're probably the sort of guy who sits in a lot of meetings.
Unfortunately, more meetings than I want to sit in, yes.
I think, you know, I don't. My job, I don't have a lot of meetings.
But this is a meeting, isn't it?
I suppose it's a meeting, but I don't like meetings, and I feel like they're pretty much a monumental waste of time.
I think most people feel that way. It might be due to the show The Office or some of the Dilbert cartoons back in
the
day.
Or some of the meetings they'd had to go to.
Or some of the meetings they had to go to based on those shows, right? But meetings aren't the problem, Steve. The problems are the people running the meetings.
Okay.
It's kind of like we met the enemy and the enemy's us.
Right, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we have that problem for the longest times. And our meetings, to be really blunt, were horrific.
Right.
To the point where you'd see people rolling their eyes saying, oh, God, I have to go to this other meeting again. And then we finally got to the point where we realized that meetings serve a purpose. And as long as you have a specific agenda and an ideal outcome, we're meeting because we have a problem with the client, right? That's what we wanted to meet today. It's a typed up agenda. You know what the outcome of what you want that to be. And then you assign action items to everyone with due dates. And if it don't last longer than an hour and it's singly focused, they're not a waste of time.
So the key is to have the focus on it and to stick with the focus.
Exactly. You can't just say I'm going to have a meeting because
let's get together and talk about this.
Right. It's the meeting about the meeting, right?
Right, right. Well, the idea, too, of the, okay, now we're going to have the weekly pink meeting and then the weekly, you know, this meeting and the weekly right. that meeting. That, to me, seems like such a time sucker.
It is a complete waste of time. But if you have a specific problem or a goal, and you want to align it with an agenda, and you know what the outcome of that you want the outcome to be, people come with their brains ready to operate on, I want to solve that problem.
One of the things that strikes me, too, is I've been in meetings, and actually my wife suggested this, but I've been in meetings where I've come out of them with a very clear idea of what happened in that meeting. And it wasn't the same idea of for the other people in the meeting, right?
We both see a dog and the dog looks different.
Right. And so sometimes it's a zebra.
Right.
So I've learned when I'm having a meeting of some consequence to come out and then to sort of type up a summary of it and to send that to the key players and said, I enjoyed the meeting. Here's what happened.
Yeah. I'm a fan of that, Steve, but I'm also, I think, a bigger fan of the idea of, okay, we have a problem we want to address, right? And this is what we all agree the outcome of that problem. We want the problem to go away. And I'm a fan of typing up the recap being, these are the action items. Steve, this is what you committed you're going to do
mm-hmm.
by this date. Adam committed to do this by this date. And Anna committed to do this by this date. And that should be the recap is what we're committing to do.
And then it's written down. It's documented.
Down. And then the next time you meet, you're given an update on, Steve, you said we can get it done by Friday. Today's Friday. Where are we at on that?
You also say in some of your suggestions that the meeting should be interactive.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it shouldn't be me pontificating about how great I am, and you're going to just –
Go on, Adam. It's okay. Go ahead.
No, you a meeting should be – if you have a meeting about a problem or an idea, grab different people in the organization who have a different vantage point and have some banter. And it's okay that you walk out of there not all agreeing.
I guess that's my question, or maybe that's the crux of it. And if you are the person setting up a meeting, you know – like they always say, a lawyer should never ask a question of a witness that she or he doesn't know the answer
right.
to. Do you set up a meeting open-ended, like you don't know what's going to come out of it? Or are you guiding your sort of partners into seeing it your way?
What we'll do is and I will never attend a meeting that does not have a typed email of a Word doc or some type of document that on one side of it shows this is the purpose of the meeting. This is what the desired outcome is. Here's the agenda, and here's action items on the other side. So I will literally decline a meeting if that's not provided to me ahead of time because I don't want to waste time.
That's Adam Oxtein. He is the founder and CEO of StratX. And where's Maryland now? Are they didn't lose, did they?
We will hopefully be beating Nebraska at 9 o'clock East Coast time tonight.
Okay, so. You live here now. At least use Central time.
I use Real Coast time.
ACC. All right. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. So how do you like your eggs? Let's go to Renshaw, Minnesota and say hello to Lucy Amundsen. She and her husband run an egg farm there. They call it Locally Laid. Lucy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with that cheeky name. Where did the idea Locally Laid come from?
Well, we thought we wanted a name that really showcased what we did. So we wanted it to overtly say that we had this, you know, this differential, what made us different from other eggs, and that it is a locally laid egg. And then there was this kind of sweet double entendre that helped break up the clutter in the marketplace when it comes to mediums.
You know, is it true your nickname is Bird?
It is Bird, just from Jason, though.
It didn't come from the chicken farm.
It didn't. It was unintentional foreshadowing.
Right. It's doom. It was inevitable. It was just a matter of time
before
you realized it. Well, you know, we talk a lot about tech startups here and local businesses in Chicago and things like that. Your startup 4 years ago was hardly tech. How did you arrive at this idea of a pasture egg farm?
Really, this is all on Jason. Honestly, I wanted nothing to do with it because we don't have any agricultural experience. We just had 5 backyard hens. But what Jason saw was this just niche in the market in that pasture-raised eggs really taste great. Like, they're really yolky, and they have this hilarious yolk integrity, people say. Like, it's hard to break them up. So it's a superior egg. And Jason just kind of scanned the dairy shelves and saw that there was nothing like it. And he had a passion to bring people this better product.
And so you did it. It took a couple of years, really, for you to start bringing any money in, correct?
It took a long time because, you know, we were actually, sales were good and we were bringing in money, but running a new business is kind of like a surprise party. Like every day there's something new that needs to be taken care of, that lots of opportunity to reinvest in the company.
You know, my wife and I have this egg issue at our house, and I'm a guy you're going to have to win over because she spends up for her eggs. She buys these organic cage-free eggs. And then I go to the supermarket and I see where I can buy 18 eggs for half the price of what she pays for a dozen cage-free eggs. Pasture-raised eggs are even higher end, but you're telling me that we can taste the difference.
Yes, because what you're talking about, those like, which is essentially almost like a buck a dozen eggs, they're really a commodity product, and so for them they're an egg, and as egg is an egg, and I'm never going to say they taste bad.
Yeah.
They just don't taste like anything. And you take a pasture-raised egg, which, because the girls are outside, we call them salad-eating poultry athletes, they're outside exercising and having a varied diet, you can taste that flavor, but you also have less fat,
Lucy, this
less
is
cholesterol.
This is 2016. Nothing tastes like anything anymore, right?
Isn't that the truth? That is, you know, honestly, sometimes I'll be tabling, talking to people about our eggs, and if it is a younger person, like maybe below 30, and I say that the yolk has an intense yolk flavor, I've had people say, well, yolk doesn't have a flavor.
Wow.
And it's almost heartbreaking because I'm trying to describe what yolk tastes like to people who have never tasted it.
Lucy Amundson is on the phone line. She and her husband run Locally Laid. It's a pasture egg farm in Minnesota. And she's also written a memoir about it. It's called Locally Laid. And we're talking about books here as well. It's a fun book about a serious story. I mean, how's the reaction been to the book so far?
You know, it's been really positive. I've had a lot of people say, you know, I had to review this book for work, and I ended up, A, thinking it was more fun and enjoyable to read than I thought it was, and B, I really learned something. And those are the two biggest compliments you could give to me.
Well, one of the things I learned is the difference, or maybe that there is such a thing as a pasture egg farm. I mean, I thought cage-free eggs were the most luxurious way, but really cage-free eggs aren't that luxurious either, are they? Compare for me the difference between your girls in the pasture and other girls in the cage-free environment.
Oh, I'm so glad you recognize that difference. Cage-free is better than birds that are confined to a literal cage that is about the size of a piece of paper. The cage-free birds get to kind of wander around their warehouse. So they can walk around. So that's better, but it's a lot like they living in a casino. You know, they have no natural light. They have no idea what season it is, so they don't do any of the natural things that they would do. And then they miss out on being on the pasture where they can get a much more varied diet. And so they eat their feed ration, of course, but then they have a salad of grasses and seeds and clover and bugs and frogs that are in totally the wrong place at the wrong time.
All right, so if I can get my dozen eggs, like you said, a buck a dozen, and then you're presenting consumers with your eggs, which run, what, a little more than $5 a dozen. How do you find those consumers, and how do you get them to, you know, crack one of those eggs?
Well, you know, I really know who my customer base is. I know that they are foodies and environmentalists and people who care about animal welfare and people. There's kind of like this whole small business sector of fans. And I really target them when I am marketing. I'm not trying to convert someone who is really loving that value of their cheap eggs. You know,
those
aren't my people.
Well,
I really talk to those other folks.
I don't know. Maybe I am one of your people, Lucy, because...
Are you?
Well, I mean, if you break it down, if we're talking about, obviously... a buck a dozen eggs are much more affordable, but overall the price, if you're having two eggs, you know, you're still talking about maybe the difference of a dollar a meal. And that's not that big of a deal if the taste is that much different. So I suppose I need to admit to my wife once again that maybe I was wrong.
and practice.
Give it a try. Now, you have, you're in Minnesota, but did I read you have a partnership with someone in Indiana? Are they close to the Chicago area?
Well, actually, we do have partner farms, and so they raised to our brand standard, and it didn't work out with our partners in Indiana.
Okay.
They just couldn't maintain that. We have a really high standard, but we did find other folks closer to Chicago that supply the Chicago area. So you are able to get a local product in Chicagoland.
How do we find it?
You know, you could go to our website, locallylaid.com, and look up where we're at there. Certainly ask your dairy manager if they would carry Locally Laid eggs, or even just another pasture-raised product that they could bring in. Because when we all do better when we all do better.
You know, I'm talking to you now, and I don't hear chickens pecking in the background. And chickens are a commodity. Minnesota has had great trouble with birds, right, with bird flu. And so you guys are, I mean, you were down over the winter, correct?
Yes, it's been very hard we're like a mid-size farm. And to find chickens, young birds, for us to buy has been very hard post-bird flu. You know, my whole industry is replacing 45 million chickens. And you can imagine that that big agriculture with their big contracts are being served first. We even had a flock sold out from under us this year.
Really?
So it has been very hard for us mid-sized people to procure the amount of birds that we need to keep at full force.
Listen, Lucy Amundson, it was great to talk to you today. People can find more information at locallylaid.com and check out the memoir, too. It's a lot of fun. A memoir, is that the right word?
Yeah, it is a memoir. It's also, like I also say, it's a narrative nonfiction because it's a story, but there's all this U.S. Census data and ag policy thrown in a way that hopefully people can digest and still enjoy the book.
Well, we are in a revolutionary time where people want to know more about their food and they care more about it so that not everything does taste the same in 2016. Lucy, thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for your thoughtful questions.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And lo and behold, Scott Kleinberg is in the studio as well. He writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for coming. We're out of time. No, we're running a little late. I hung out with the eggs a little longer than expected, but I really enjoyed talking to Lucy Amundson. But you brought in a study of Instagram and, you know, people who take pictures of their food.
Yep.
And that's a big deal. And I do it, too, more than I would admit.
I do, too.
But I don't do it because of the beauty. I just do it to share with someone. Well, I don't know. But people who do that think their food tastes better?
Yes.
I love this. Why is that?
Yes. So this is a study that found that it probably has more to do with the fact that the longer you take to capture the food, the better it tastes or the better you think it tastes, because studies have shown that the act of delaying, even for a moment, leads to a more positive perception.
So if you're really looking forward to this pizza all weekend long, when you get to that pizza, ooh, it's going to be great.
Yes.
So if the food arrives on your table and you take the time to take a picture and share it, you're delaying your sort of gratification.
Exactly. And if you think of how you take an Instagram photo, you don't just point your phone and shoot the photo. You point your phone and you center it. You make it perfect. You make sure the background's perfect. That's exactly how I do it. I move the glass out of the way. It has to be the perfect picture. I think it has so much to do with it.
Yeah, I got news for you. I just point my camera at the phone and shoot it, or at the pizza.
I'll have to be on the lookout for
it. Not that I've ever sent you one. All right, so I like that. So if you're going out for dinner tonight, and if you're taking a date out and you want her to enjoy dinner a little bit more, ask her to take a picture of her filet. She wouldn't have filet. Of her shrimp de jong.
I'm sure she'll be thrilled to know that's your plan, but yes.
And then
yes.
Try to steal her fingerprint, right? There's another story where I have the new iPhone 6 Gigante. I don't know, it's iPhone
Plus.
6 Plus.
Yes.
And it comes with the thumbprint to activate it.
Yep.
So I thought I was pretty much golden, that people couldn't break into my phone. And now you say there actually are reports that people can simulate your thumbprint?
Simulate your thumbprint using a high energy special printer. Not a special printer, but special paper on a printer. So obviously you'd have to have access to the fingerprint and do all those things. But it just goes to show that printing out a fingerprint could be just as good or at least enough to fool a phone into unlocking it.
So this is maybe fraud and make-believe right now. It hasn't happened.
It really hasn't happened in a grand scale type of thing, but just the proof of concept, just the fact that you can actually do something like that shows that hackers are always staying one step ahead of people. You know, obviously tech companies are going to make this more secure as we go on, but the fact that you can do this with a normal printer and some really expensive paper, or not too expensive, just decent paper, is very telling.
But they'd have to have my thumb.
Yes, yes. They'd have to actually have
fingerprint.
So
as long as I keep my thumbs with me all the time,
yes,
chances are pretty good.
Don't leave any glasses on the table in restaurants and that kind of thing.
Right.
It'd be okay.
Okay, so we're, 6 weeks away from the next big Apple announcement?
Actually, it's closer than that. It's the end of this month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they come out, was it twice a year with these
big new
products?
Yeah, usually twice a year.
All right, and probably more fun than the actual announcement is all of the gossiping and speculation ahead of it.
So oh, yes.
What are we expecting this year?
The big thing that we're expecting is a 4-inch iPhone, which is a big deal because, like you're talking about with the big old Plus, which is 5.5 inches, they've moved away from the 4 and to the bigger phones.
Why
now
would they do that?
Because people are requesting it. People are saying, you know what? I really miss my smaller phone. I don't know who these people are. I cannot even look at the small phones anymore. But
well, they're not people with reading. They're not people with reading glasses. I'll tell you that.
That's for sure.
All right. That, so that's coming up again later this month,
March 21st, I think it is.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll talk about it a few more times.
Sounds great.
Scott Kleinberg writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
This is a Business Lunch on 720 WGN.